Joe.
Hi, Kathy. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Great.
You're a thought leader here in the clinical research space, so thanks very much for your time.
Thanks.
Wanted to hear from various folks about their thoughts about some of the topics in clinical research.
Yeah, great. I'm happy to do it.
Well, I'm glad you had the time. So I have a couple of topics for you. The first is about patients. So there's a lot of talk about patient centricity. You know, we're hearing that patients are now the center versus doctors and so forth. And I know you've had a lot of conversations. You've actually done a lot of speaking about patients. So how do you talk about patients when it comes to clinical research?
Yeah, I guess, I mean, there's a number of ways to talk about it, but I like to try and demystify it first by telling people, by comparing to like something that's child-friendly, right? So if you're a parent, you immediately know when something is child-friendly, right, versus not. But when it comes to clinical research, when we talk about you know, something that's patient-friendly or patient-centric, people lose their heads. They're like, how do I... Well, you know, it's got to be considerate of that patient and the needs, just like a child-friendly place is also, right? No cigarette smoke, no cursing, no alcohol, small toilets for children. And then for patients, it's the same thing. So depending on the disease, it's just about being considerate of all those different needs and desires and drives. And it's going to be different for each patient and each indication. To demystify it as like just a subject or a topic, that's kind of how I like to start. But then when you get into the details, it's really about how you then work with patients to ensure that you're doing something that's patient-centric. Right? I can make a guess as to, you know, creating something that's good for my child, but if you could actually work with the child and, mm-hmm. and you know, design around that child, it's going to be better. And so we try and do that at Lilly for sure, working with patients to design research from the get-go. If you could do one thing, that's where you should start.
So I've heard people talk about how patients are involved in the design of clinical trials. There's some examples that you can read about. Also, we've heard how patients are involved with the FDA, with the EMA, with giving advice or getting involved in the review. We've also heard about patient advocacy groups. How do you see patients' involvement in the next 12 months or in the next even 24 months?
Yeah. So it's funny, just recently in the past year or so, a patient group called Savvy Co-op has been formed, led by Jennifer Horonchef, I can never say her name right, and also Lily Stairs, both really prominent patient influencers. And what they've created is a model sort of based on the gig economy, mm-hmm. where patients can be matched up with other healthcare organizations or life science organizations, so that you can rapidly, an organization can rapidly match with a patient who can help them with their sort of business goals.
Okay.
And then you have a patient who can come forward and is vetted and the logistics are taken care of in a way that makes that easier. Because prior to that, you'd have to basically either work through an advocacy group,
yep.
or somehow have a pre-existing relationship with an influencer,
yep.
or, you know, God forbid, just try and finding them on the internet or some other kind of advertising way. So the new era is already kind of being brought forward, and I think you'll see a lot more of this happening, certainly if not just through Savvy Co-op, but through other organizations that might do this.
What about the thought, though, like, have you ever had this conversation with folks, well, we're patients, so isn't it good enough that we give the input?
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about that?
You know, it's not a bad place to start, but it's often really hard for people to take their hat off when they're in the organization because they just know too much. And there's so much tacit knowledge that a researcher will have or a clinician will have that it's just you just can't forget it, right? You just know certain things. So it's not a bad place to try and start, but you're better off just really getting someone who doesn't know anything about the business, whatever that business might be, whether it's doctoring, nursing, or research design, to have them provide their insights and come from naive place. And I mean that in a positive way. We don't want people that are too sophisticated with, you know, the business at hand.
So, you know, I'm in Tampa. Right?
Yeah.
So there's this company that I live near, and they actually just released this whole new device. It's like, do you remember when we actually got that temporary device where you could actually sit into it and it almost looked like a little phone booth?
Mm-hmm.
So they've got this device now. It's got a telemedicine center in it, and you basically can sit into it. You can actually talk to your doctor. You can actually have a consultation. At the end of the visit, it actually can dispense pretty much a lot of the meds that you actually need at the end of your visit. Not everything would be covered, but actually the majority of probably the meds that you might need at the end of your visit can now be dispensed. Then actually leaving this particular booth, it's then sanitized for the next patient or the next customer that would actually come into the booth to actually then have their next visit. And so it's called OnMed. It's actually now been released. They're actually going to be putting them up in universities. They're going to be putting them up in various locations across the United States, hopefully to help streamline getting your medical care, your health care, and so forth. And so I thought that was actually pretty cool.
Yeah.
I know other companies had tried it. There had been some attempt to do them in some pharmacies, some shopping malls, and so forth. I think even you and I even had an opportunity to sort of think about that from an innovation point of view in our past. But it actually didn't take off. But this is a little bit of a different spin on it. And so I was wondering what your thoughts about, is this something that could actually get integrated into clinical research?
Yeah, you know, I think for clinical research that doesn't have kind of a life-threatening component to it, where there are more run-of-the-mill visits, whether they be some sort of capturing of vital signs or reporting of AEs, and the patient is well enough to sort of go into this on their own or with a caregiver, that's probably a good early use case for it. I think, yeah, it could enhance the ability for patients to participate in research without always having to drive into the clinic, because the clinic might be far away. So I would start there immediately. Like, yeah, let's have all the vital signs and physical exams done in a way that's easy and convenient versus having them, you know, sit in a waiting room and do a bunch of other visits. So if you can break apart a visit, which includes something like a physical exam, vital signs, and in addition to more sort of complicated procedures, it could certainly help.
Yeah, I was really interested to sort of see how the consent might work, like how the records are captured, you know, how you'd even think about this. Is this like a medical device? Is this a sensor? It'd be interesting to sort of look at how that record's actually obtained and how the patient could actually consent for it to be released.
Yeah.
To actually be considered for...
I mean, if it's just a telemedicine booth where it's a video chat, that's one thing. But if it's got devices in there where you can actually put on a cuff and it'll do some things, or it'll have maybe a camera where you can open your mouth and you can look inside, there's probably other, you know, creative ways this company could add features and devices to it that's beyond just a video chat. So that would be interesting to see.
Yeah, it's just interesting to see how they're actually doing. They're starting to blend certain things together, like the dispensing and the actual assessments and the interaction with healthcare providers. And I know you really pay attention to this space. I actually saw that you posted recently about Alexa, and you might want to share a little bit about that. And maybe we'll share your thoughts about how that might start changing clinical research.
Sure. I mean, Alexa is interesting because it's an intelligent assistant to some degree. You can describe it that way. And, you know, most people have initially bought it to manage their what's streaming in terms of music or to order something new. But they allow organizations to hack into Alexa, and you can do some pretty creative things with it. And you can, you know, create a way to have a medical questionnaire happen over Alexa or other kinds of medical requests or engagements. And while in the past, Alexa has just been kind of open on the back end to let people do that, it hasn't been done because it wouldn't be quite responsible to do that because it wasn't HIPAA compliant. But it finally is. And not only that, but a lot of the Amazon Web Services in the background of our, you know, the press releases are saying those are now HIPAA compliant too. So to be able to use a lot of this technology to manage healthcare data responsibly kind of opens up a whole new world of being able to not only engage with patients in healthcare, but in clinical research. And so I'm excited to see what we can do.
Where do you think we should start?
Yeah, you know, I think a lot of times, I'm glad you asked that question because most people go to the point of like, we can't do everything. Where does it end? And it's always, the question is, where do you start? I think for clinical research, starting in the site actually might be most intriguing to me.
Okay.
Meaning, if you can have an intelligent assistant at the site, one thing that sites often lament about is the inability to get an answer to their question around research.
Right.
And so they can call a CRA and leave a message, or they call email a study coordinator, versus saying, hey, Alexa, for study 1, 2, 3, what's the titration algorithm from A to B? And then Alexa will have that information already in there. So I think that's probably a better place to start versus directly with patients. I would like to see that. And, you know, it's a little bit safer. You're not going to have a scale problem, because if you're only using 30 sites, you only need 30 Alexas, versus are you going to really rely on a patient to have Alexa in their home? So we'll get there with the patients, but I think the site area is the best place to start.
Interesting. That's very interesting. With respect to language with Alexa, have you dug into that a little bit? How many languages does it speak?
In having worked for a variety of pharma companies, typically the requirement is for the site personnel to speak English. Business English anyway.
Yeah.
But you're right. I think it'd be much more, it might be much better for a site personnel to be able to use their own language.
Yeah.
But you know, given if you scope the Alexa use case that I mentioned around site training to a key set of questions, you know, I think you could rapidly, easily do that in a multitude of languages versus having it wide open for it to accept any question.
Yeah.
Just keep it to the 10, 20 questions that Alexa's intended to help you answer.
Yeah. Well, that's great. Well, thanks for sharing your thoughts. Really appreciate your time.
Yeah.
And look forward to hearing from you in the future.
Yeah, it's good to see you. Thanks
good
for
to
having
see you.
Me.
You're very welcome.